The Book Nook on WYSO is made possible by 5 local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, and the Dayton Metro Library.
Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I am absolutely delighted to welcome back Denise Minen to the program. Hello, Denise.
Hi, Vic. How are you?
Excellent. You were so kind. You called us from Scotland. It must be about, what, 6 o'clock at night there?
It's 6 o'clock at night, commonly known as tea time.
Oh.
A really urgent point in the day.
And where?
You start making tea.
Where in Scotland are you having your tea?
Glasgow.
Oh. And that is a city.
It has been raining for 2 weeks, and I don't know if the sun is coming up anymore.
Yeah, it's that way here, too.
So dark and gray.
Well, Glasgow is a city that I associate with you because you set a lot of your work in Glasgow. Now, in this new novel, Blood, Salt, Water, we get to go a little bit outside of town, don't we?
It's a different book. It's set in one of the most beautiful, it's sort of the 19th century Hamptons, and it's a really beautiful Scottish town on the west coast of Scotland, with mountains behind and the sea in front and beautiful Victorian villas. But there's a real strange subculture there. I mean, it's not a place I've made up, it's a real place. And I was speaking at a festival at the weekend out in Helensburgh, and I said, you know, it's a very strange, creepy place, and all the locals agreed with me. It's a very strange, creepy place. It's absolutely beautiful, but there's a really odd kind of subculture of minicab drivers listening to Tupac and selling each other cocaine and trying to set fires to one another's businesses. And kind of, you know, upper middle class people sort of floating above all this and pretending that they don't know anybody who does these kinds of things. It's a really odd town, but very beautiful.
And it's right on the water.
Right on the water. And it was built as a kind of holiday resort for 19th century capitalists from Glasgow. So at one time, a quarter of all the millionaires in Britain had a house there. It was so wealthy. And so the houses are beautiful, kind of big, you know, Victorian villas with like 4 reception rooms and butler's pantries and quarters for the maids. And now the people that live there, they're fairly ordinary people. But it really is a town of two halves. And the book is set during the referendum in the 2 weeks leading up to the independence referendum that we had here. And it was very, very fraught out there because they were going to shut a naval base if it happened, and the town would have been kind of decimated. And so the politics, everything was very heightened. You know, we all went a bit nuts.
You start the book out with a quotation, and it kind of threw me until I read the book. And the quotation is, "All of us have in our veins the exact same percentage of salt in our blood that exists in the ocean. And, therefore, we have salt in our blood, in our sweat, in our tears. We are tied to the ocean. And when we go back to the sea, whether it is to sail or to watch it, we are going back from whence we came." And that quote is attributed to President John F. Kennedy. Where did you get that?
Isn't that amazing? He gave it in a speech to a yachting club. And, you know, scientifically, it's true. Obviously, it's nonsense, but it's such a poetical idea that we're of the sea and that we're drawn to the sea. And, you know, Celts always say that we're drawn to the sea. Celts will always gravitate towards the shore. And the town of Helensburgh is a place that people come from. So people always go back there at some point in their life because of a death or because they go back to show off. Or they go back to sell the family home. And so people come from all over the world back to Helensburgh. and it just feels like they're coming back across the sea. So it's an analogy that sort of recurs throughout the book. And I love salt water because salt water is the only substance that can lift blood out of clothes. And, you know, the idea that these towns have, you know, the towns around there have been there since Viking times, and people have been coming back and going away. And it's just a lovely idea that we're part of the sea and that the sea is in us and that we're drawn to the sea.
Is Helensburgh then on the ocean or is it on Loch Lomond?
Loch Lomond is just over a big mountain.
Okay.
But Helensburgh itself is on the sea, so okay. It looks out into the Irish Sea.
I didn't look it up on the map. I kind of thought you made it up.
Oh, did you? Oh, that's great. That's great. It's such a strange place. You couldn't get half of how strange it is into a book, to be honest with you. And I was so pleased at the weekend because I said to the audience, I can't do my spiel because you all know that there is a town called Helensburgh on the west coast of Scotland. And they started laughing. And I said, but I'll tell you what I say to people. And I told them, you know, it's a mesmerizingly strange place. And everybody applauded. So obviously that's quite accurate. But I'm glad you thought it was made up. It's strange enough to be made up.
Yeah, really. Denise Mina joins us. Her new novel is Blood, Salt, Water. And it's another in her series featuring Alex Morrow. And the last time we had you on the program was for another book in this series, and that was the end of the wasp season. As this one opens, we have a murder about to take place. And from the very start, you create the most sympathetic killer I think I've ever known.
Really?
I think so. We really like this poor schlub.
Well, I think, you know, I want to write characters where you understand why people are doing things. I don't think my books are whodunits so much as why did somebody do something. And sometimes when you hear about a murder like that, you think, how could anybody do that? I don't think anyone gets up in the morning and thinks, I'm going to be really bad today. I think maybe someone gets up in the morning and thinks, I'm going to show off to my friends, or I'm going to earn money, or, you know, I'm going to fix this for somebody. I'm going to raise money to pay for this thing. And I think that's much more interesting than the idea that individuals are evil or, you know, I think criminality is a system in society rather than one person deciding to be evil.
Let's talk about Alex Morrow. She is a police officer and she investigates homicides, and she's also a very conflicted person and a very angry person. Her anger is such a huge part of her.
Well, in Scotland, you see, it's funny because I think in America, people say, God, you know, your books are so dark and your character's so angry. And in Scotland, people say, yeah, I know women like that because we're all quite angry women here. And then you go to Scandinavia and people say, oh, your books are so funny. So, you know, it's kind of cultural. I think she is quite an angry, conflicted person. But I think maybe it's very Scottish to be a very angry woman. And, you know, maybe that's a way of having power. I don't know. She's not much angrier than I am, but I'm less rude because I like people.
Okay. Well, she has a complicated family history. And for those listeners who have read some of the previous books, that's because of her half-brother. And her half-brother's always kind of looming out there, isn't he?
Well, her half-brother is a gangster, and she's a police officer. And the idea, you know, it's, I think in quite small communities, you often have somebody that you're related to that, you know, doesn't live the same kind of life as you. Well, maybe that's true in all communities. I don't know. But in Scotland, we have a long tradition of the shadow self in literature, where there are two characters who mirror one another, one good, one bad. Mm. And I just felt that, you know, a lot of police officers are related to people who have subsequently grown up to be drug dealers or, you know, who went another path. And I just thought it was so interesting. It actually came about because I live in quite a posh area. And my neighbour downstairs was a gangster. And he was the nicest neighbour we've ever had. And I just thought, God, you could be my brother. And that was kind of where the idea for it came from. No one in the street was ever burglarized while he was living here.
I can imagine.
He had a face covered in scars.
Oh, my. What are the underlying themes in this story is the fact that some of these police departments – are trying to take assets away from criminals so that they can have them for their departments. And this creates a lot of complications. We do the same thing here in the United States, but it really makes it difficult to be a police officer, at least for Alex Morrow, doesn't it?
I mean, I think, you know, administrative ideas and political ideas, we had a big shakeup here where all the police forces in Scotland were joined into one. And so you had, it became very obvious who was making decisions. For example, they got rid of all the administrative staff, so police officers were doing the admin jobs. It was supposed to be a way of saving money. And because of that, they were doing jobs that they didn't really have skills in. And somebody phoned up and said, I think a car has crashed at the side of the road. This is a true story. And the police officer wrote it on a bit of paper and lost the bit of paper. 3 days later, they found a couple dead in a car at the side of the road. Now, that was just an administrative decision about how to save money and ended in, you know, the death of a young couple. So these things are happening all the time. And, you know, I think they're really interesting that we sort of assume that everybody is on point doing the same job, you know, that police officers are very clear about what their job and their agenda is. And actually, a lot of that gets messed up with small, pragmatic administrative decisions.
Would you please give our listeners just a little hint of what the story's about? I'm a little nervous about giving anything away.
Well, a man called Ian Fraser has to kill a woman to pay a debt for somebody. And he is tortured by what he has done. And he feels he's changing and he's haunted by this woman. And a woman has come back to the town to sell her mother's very big, beautiful house. She's called Miss Grierson. And Miss Grierson reappears and no one really knows, you know, what she's like anymore. She's been living in America. And she becomes a bit of a strange kind of character in the background. But at the same time, this whole subculture of mini gangsters are going to dances and they're trying to organise basically low-level drug dealing in this very beautiful town in the west coast of Scotland. And a businesswoman goes missing in Glasgow at the same time, and somehow they find out that she has been to Helensburgh and she's wrapped up in all of this.
And that is Blood, Salt, Water, the new novel by Denise Mina. She joins us on the program. She was kind enough to call in from Glasgow this evening. Oh, actually, this morning here, this evening there. And I think the last Scottish writer that we had called in in August, some guy named Ian Rankin.
I've heard of that guy. I've heard he's very good. I hope that's okay. The internet has gone down. And you would honestly think the family had been taken by the Nazis. My kids are going nuts out in the hall. I'm so sorry. I hope you can't hear them.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. The internet has gone in the whole street. I don't know what's going on. But my kids are acting as if their grand died or something. They're weeping and wailing. I hope you couldn't pick them up.
Denise, are you old enough to remember when we didn't have an internet? What did we do?
We read and complained, and we watched TV we didn't enjoy.
Very good. This character.
Remember those days?
I do, very fondly.
They were good.
I was thinking about
chucking the phone. I'm addicted to my phone.
Are you?
It's ridiculous, yeah. I'm like a slave. And my phone measures how much I walk. Oh. I don't know who it's telling. I'm not interested. But they measure where you go, and it's GPS. You're basically we're all on tags.
Yes.
With these phones.
You mentioned Miss Grierson. When she's first introduced into the story, it's all very innocuous. But for those of us who are familiar with your work, some of us at least probably think, she maybe isn't as innocuous as we think at the moment.
Did you have a heads up, good?
That's good. There's something.
It's a real psychopathic conversation. But maybe you know a lot of psychopaths. Is that what radio's like?
Sure. this guy that runs this shop, I really enjoyed this character, and he's kind of a pawn in the story, but his resentment, particularly of people who want gluten-free products, is just palpable. This is a fun little side humor bit for me as a reader.
I mean, I know people who sell gluten-free products, and they do. bitterly resent people with medical conditions who are buying basically, you know, nutritional food from them. They hate them. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I think it's awkward to cook with.
I think one of my favorite scenes is later in the book, and it's when Alex Morrow, they've finally found the woman who's the original murder victim, and then they find her children, and she goes to the house to visit these kids. And the conversation she has with them, I love the way you capture the dialogue and the way that you have these kids speak. It's so much fun.
I love those girls. I know lots of families like that all talk over the top of each other. And I made a film. My cousin's a filmmaker, and we filmed my mum's family. My mum is one of 15. And we filmed her and all her siblings talking about growing up in this tiny house. And then we showed it to them in a cinema and filmed them watching themselves. And it was so interesting because they were interrupting each other while watching the movie. And they're in their 90s, slapping each other for saying things like, she always ate too many buns or whatever. And so that whole scene was taken from all those sisters sitting in the front row of the cinema.
And you have this character who we only see briefly, and she's a young girl who is sort of channeling her grandmother's, and she's another wonderful character.
The little girl.
Yeah, the little girl.
I met a little girl on a bus once, and she spoke like a 70-year-old, and then I realized that she was being raised by her grandmother, and she would say really old-fashioned things, and God, it was just charming. You know, you can really tell people who spend a lot of time with older folk, and she had lots of little old lady gestures, and I said to her, you talk like a little old lady, and she said, I'm a granny grey hips. And so, you know, it must be like a kind of feature of people who are raised by their grandparents. People stop you in the street and tell you stories, and everybody talks to everybody, and people will tell each other stories at bus stops and things. So for a writer, it's just gold.
How did you get the idea for this particular story? What were the seeds that ended up sprouting?
Well, I was thinking about a woman was killed, and she was a sex worker. And her family were very sympathetic. They were lovely people. And her parents did an appeal on her behalf. And she was a very pretty girl. She was white. And she had started to take drugs after a tragic personal event. And that was how she became a sex worker. And I was just thinking about all the girls who didn't have a sympathetic narrative trajectory and had been killed, because there were a few sex workers had been killed that year. And so I really wanted to write a story with two women in it, one of whom was sympathetic and one of whom wasn't sympathetic, and look at the different ways that those deaths would affect a reader, that one of them would matter and one of them wouldn't matter. And so that was really where it came from. That was where the idea came from. And then there was a house fire out in Helensburgh to do with this strange subculture of drug selling, and that was why I decided to set it in Helensburgh. And also a friend of mine, I meet her out there all the time because she lives, it's sort of halfway between our houses, and she would say, come and meet me in hell, and we would spend time in Helensburgh, so I became kind of hypnotized by the town.
She called it hell?
Hell. Meet me in hell, she used to say.
I like that. Denise Miner joins
us. It's so beautiful. When you go out there, it's ludicrous for it to be called that because it is just really, I mean, it's just stunning.
This house that Miss Grierson has apparently inherited from her mother, this is almost something out of Dickens with all the dust and cobwebs and decay. And there's something incredibly creepy. There's something almost Hitchcockian about this house.
There are houses out there on lines of beautiful, beautiful houses. There's an occasional abandoned, melting house. Particularly, the house was built as a holiday resort, and all the houses kind of match each other, and they have different, you know, fictions playing. You know, we're all nautical houses, and we're pretending to be in a field. And then as you get further up the hill, you know, people who were rich made more and more money. So coal and steel magnates built these huge Gothic castles that sort of loomed over the town. And those ones, you can't convert them into houses now. They're much too big. And you can't get pipes up on them because they're built on granite or something. So they're all melting back into the ground, and, you know, windows are falling in, and they're very, very creepy. And they're all at the back of the town. So that was kind of where the idea for that came from.
Wow. That they really exist.
You need to come. It's an amazing place.
Come visit hell.
Come to hell. Meet me in hell. And also, the whole town is surrounded by old folks' homes because those are big, big houses. And that's where people want to retire. So the second-hand shops, the charity shops out there, are full of fantastic stuff because they sell off everything people leave and don't want to take home. If you need a new purse, I will take you to hell.
your character who runs this little restaurant, he has a really snappy thing to say about these charity shops, but we'll leave that to readers to read. It's a, he's conversing with Miss Grierson, and as we go through the story, we discover that there are two lines of this clan, the Frasers. Do you want to talk about them?
Well, the family, going back in the family history, there was a schism. Now, people find it hard to believe, but you know, Scots-Irish people, the Reformation is kind of still going on, really. You know, we don't let things go. And so for people to leave a Protestant family, even a generation ago, and become Catholic was a big deal and could cause a forever schism in a family. My family are Catholic, and we were told stay away from Protestants. And I think we maybe misunderstood. So I have about 60 cousins, and every one of us is married to a Protestant, apart from myself. I'm married to a Jewish guy. And I think maybe we misunderstood and thought they were saying they're too sexy. Just stay away from them. They're just too much sex. But, you know, the kind of sexualization of the other, you know. But, I mean, it was a big, big deal. You know, cousins of mine who married Protestants even 30, 40 years ago would get letters of concern from family members saying, you just don't know what you're doing. What do the children even look like, you know? And ironically enough, when you come from outside, we're all identical. You know, there's really no difference. But that was conceivable then, that you would, a family would, you know, never see each other again living in the same town because somebody became a Catholic.
Denise Mina joins us. Her new novel, an Alex Morrow novel, is Blood, Salt, and Water. And I was very fond of your previous series featuring the journalist, Patty. Is there any chance we'll see more of her?
You know, there is. I'm going to write the next two Patty Meehan books. And and I don't know if you've been following what's been happening in newspapers over here, but basically it's gone from being a, you know, a girl on a local paper to an international fraud case. I mean, the whole story, I couldn't have made it up. Now I can have them going around in jetpacks because anything is believable in British newspapers when you write about it in hindsight now. But, yeah, so there are going to be another two Patty Meehan books, and I'm starting one of them now.
Now, some of our listeners here in the States probably aren't familiar with this referendum that you had in Scotland that is taking place or about to take place as this novel is set. Tell our listeners what happened and what that was all about. Because as we go through the story, we're constantly seeing people who say they vote yes or they vote no.
Well, there was a referendum vote to see if Scotland would leave the UK and become an independent country. And the discussion was, you know, really fascinating. I mean, really, really interesting. And everybody was involved. So everyone was discussing politics. I mean, it was a real kind of awakening. People got very involved in civic government. People who'd never paid any attention became really interested in politics. And there was a lot of falling out and there was a lot of madness, but a lot of good stuff as well. And it became very, very close, but we voted to stay within the UK. And the people who wanted to leave the UK were incredibly crestfallen. And a lot of them were real grassroots people with no experience of politics. Particularly in places like Helensburgh, where if we did become independent, they were going to shut down the naval base, which is the major industry there. So you can imagine it was very, very fraught there. But the independence campaign was very much a grassroots movement, often of working class people, often of people with nothing. And if you said anything, if you contradicted, I mean, it was like living through a religious revival, actually. It was so emotional. And, you know, it was quite difficult to have a proper debate. I mean, really, people sort of chose their position and then defended it rather than, I thought politics over here was absolutely crazy. But as soon as the referendum result died down, your primary started. And I realised, oh, my God, they actually started it crazy. So we worked up to crazy, but your national debate just went straight to bananas. I felt quite shamefaced, actually. I thought we were making a lot of fuss about nothing.
Yes, that's a...
I mean, the rhetoric in the States is crazy. I don't know how people can even listen to that. It doesn't make... You know, it's so heightened.
That's a very astute observation, Denise. Thank you for that.
Straight to mental.
Yes. Well, this book, Blood, Salt, Water, it starts with a bang, and this murder that takes place, there's almost a mystical element to it. There's something almost supernatural about it.
Well, he kills her and breathes in her last breath. And, you know, he's quite fragile anyway, Ian Fraser. And but he thinks he hears her say his mother's name. And his mother died when he was quite young, and he has a lot of unresolved things, thoughts about his mother. And he becomes convinced that the woman, he's breathed in the woman's soul, and she's going to eat her way out of his body. And he becomes very haunted by this and experiences a lot of physical changes because of this belief that she's inside him. But actually, it's just that he's so regretful about what he's done, and it's so out of character. And it turns out he's done it for an honourable reason, but he just can't live with what he's done.
There's something strangely satisfying about him as a character and the way that you deal with him throughout the story. The book is Blood, Salt, Water by Denise Mina, and it's been a real pleasure to have you back on the program, Denise. And I've got to say that scene where you had Alex Morrow and Ian near the end together, and he looks at her, and he thinks she looks like somebody else. These are scenes that just stick with me, and they'll stick with me forever.
That's lovely. Good.
I loved it.
Because I want people to remember Ian, because I think Ian's a character who's out there, and people will never remember that guy.
Well, I will. And I'll be looking forward to your next one.
Thank you so much.
Is it going to be a Paddy?
Well, I hope it will be a Paddy. Not the next one, actually. The next one is a true crime book about a Scottish serial killer in the 50s who would break into houses and kill whole families and then hang around the house. His name is Peter Manuel. And the father of one of the families was arrested for the murders, and the police wouldn't believe it wasn't him, so he said he had to turn detective, and he let it be known that he would pay for information, basically. And one of the people who came forward with information was Peter Manuel. And the two men met, and they went out on an 11-hour bender together. And no one knows what happened that night. But the next, you know, Ted Bundy represented himself in court. Well, Peter Manuel represented himself in court as well, and he called the man as a witness. So the next time they met, they have this conversation in court about the night that they spent together, and it's a really strange, disjointed conversation. I've finished that book. It's called The Long Drop, and it's out in the U.S. next year, and hopefully the one after that will be a Paddy Meehan.
Excellent. Well, Denise, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to Book Nook on WYSO. Denise Mina has been our guest. The book, Blood, Salt, Water. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.